As we go through the book of Acts, today we are in chapter 23, and this is our next to last sermon in our series of Catching Up with the Spirit, which has been our exploration of all the stories in the book of Acts. And I'm going to read a slightly different text from what's listed. I'm still going to be in chapter 23, but instead of reading verses 1 through 10, I'm going to read verses 11 through 30. I always wanted to focus on verse 11, but as I was writing the sermon, it occurred to me that the latter part of the chapter did a better job of giving context to that verse than what came before. So I'm going to actually start at chapter 23 at verse 11 and read through verse 30. That night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, "Keep up your courage, for just as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must bear witness also in Rome." Now in the morning, the religious authorities joined in a conspiracy and bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who joined in this conspiracy. They went to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have strictly bound ourselves by an oath to taste no food until we have killed Paul. Now then, you and the council must notify the tribune to bring him down to you on the pretext that you want to make a more thorough examination of his case. And we are ready to do away with him before he arrives." Now the son of Paul's sister heard about the ambush. So he went and gained entrance to the barracks and told Paul. Paul called on one of the centurions and said, "Take this young man to the tribune, for he has something to report to him." So he took him and brought him to the tribune and said, "The prisoner Paul called me and asked me to bring this young man to you. He has something to tell you." The tribune took him by the hand, drew him aside privately, and asked, "What is it that you have to report to me?" He answered, "The religious authorities have agreed to ask you to bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more thoroughly into his case. But do not be persuaded by them, for more than 40 of their men are lying in ambush for him. They have bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink until they kill Paul. They are ready now and are waiting for your consent." So the tribune dismissed the young man, ordering him, "Tell no one that you have informed me of this." Then he summoned two of the centurions and said, "Get ready to leave by 9 o'clock tonight for Caesarea with 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen. Also provide mounts for Paul to ride and take him safely to Felix the governor." He wrote a letter to this effect: "Claudius Lysias to His Excellency, the Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the religious authorities and was about to be killed by them. But when I had learned that he was a Roman citizen, I came with the guard and rescued him. Since I wanted to know the charge for which they accused him, I had him brought to their council. I found that he was accused concerning questions of their law, but was charged with nothing deserving death or imprisonment. When I was informed that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, ordering his accusers also to state before you what they have against him." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So as I mentioned before, this is our next to last sermon about the book of Acts. And this point in chapter 23 is a real pivot point. And going back to chapter 21, when Paul is arrested, he is in some kind of custody from then until the end of the book of Acts in chapter 28. At first, he's really imperiled when he's in the custody of the religious authorities in Jerusalem. And then Paul appears before them and he cleverly gets members of the council to fight with each other so that they kind of forget about Paul. But then a riot ensues, and then the authorities rescue Paul from the riot, because the last thing the Romans want is a big riot. And then, in what we just read, the Romans end up rescuing Paul from a plot to kill him. And in the larger narrative of the book of Acts, Paul then appeals to Rome, and he's taken to Rome to make his case before the imperial authorities. So that's a larger picture of what's happening. And throughout the book of Acts, we might say that Paul and Peter before him and some of the other apostles have been heroes. They've acted heroically. There have been daring stories about prison breaks. In fact, there are 3 prison breaks in the book of Acts. And there have been shipwrecks that they miraculously survived. There have been healings. There have been dramatic moments with a speaker preaching to a whole crowd. It's been that kind of an adventure tale with lots of heroism thrown in there. And we might say that Paul remains heroic. But notice what happens here. In verse 11, Jesus appears to Paul. And do you remember what happened the last time Jesus appeared before Paul? He knocked him down on the way to Damascus and said, "Why are you persecuting me?" And then Paul eventually became a part of the Jesus movement. And so now Jesus appears to Paul again and says, "Keep up your courage, for just as you have testified before me in Jerusalem, so you will also testify about me in Rome." Now, I don't know how Paul imagined a hero, but he probably did not imagine a hero being stuck in prison. If this happens in a movie, it's a small part of the plot. It's not something that is meant to be a permanent situation. But Paul is in a kind of permanent custody. And all of his oratorical talents, his genius in working with people, none of that is going to help him get out of custody. And there seems to be a larger story that Paul is now involved in. And so Paul is not a hero in that sense. Paul is part of something that God is doing. Now, there's a warning here. Some people might be tempted to say that God's will means that we have no say in our own lives, or that God determines even the bad things that happen to us. I don't believe that, because it's not consistent with the God of grace and love that I know. But what I envision instead is that God is the one who accompanies us in our toils and our joys, and God is the one who inspires real people to love and care for each other, even in times of great stress. God is the one who reminds us of our deeper purposes, who enables us to give our lives to a cause that is bigger than ourselves. That, I think, is what it means to be caught up in God's will and trying to discern God's will. We're not puppets on a string. We are beloved children of God, discovering our paths and how those paths do indeed relate in the larger story of God's love affair with the whole world. So what is needed is a kind of quiet courage. And I've always loved stories about kind of like underdog heroes, the not-so-obvious heroes, people who are big fans of the Star Wars movies. It seems like a lot of them say that their favorite movie is Rogue One. And I don't know if you know Rogue One, but in the Star Wars Episode 4, which was the first movie that came out in 1977, part of the plot is that the rebel spies have found the plans to the Death Star. And so they want to take it to the rebel commander so they can find a weakness for the Death Star and destroy it. And Princess Leia, I believe, mentions that some very brave people lost their lives getting those plans. And Rogue One is a story of how that happened, of how a very brave crew risked their lives and ultimately lost their lives in the effort to get those plans. And to me, this is one of the most moving stories in the whole Star Wars universe. And to me, the characters in Rogue One are among the most heroic. And it's been a while since I've seen that movie, and I don't remember their names. And sometimes the biggest heroes in our lives are people whose names we may or may not remember. But somehow, they had quiet courage, and maybe inspired us to be quietly courageous as well. I also think of the story of Nahshon in Exodus 14, when the Israelites are crossing the Red Sea. How many have heard of Nahshon? Well, in all honesty, if you go to Exodus 14, his name isn't there. But there's a midrash among Jewish rabbis that as they were about to part the Red Sea, they had a meeting. And the purpose of the meeting was to determine who was going to volunteer first. Who was going to step out in faith that God was really going to part the Red Sea? And for a very long, uninterrupted silence, no one said anything. And maybe some of you have been in that meeting. You're all sitting there waiting for someone to volunteer and hoping that someone does it before you have to. But Nahshon volunteers. He's going to be the first of the Israelites to step into the Red Sea before God parts the waters. And so Nahshon steps into the Red Sea up to his ankles. Water's still there, nothing's parted. He goes a little further to his knees, nothing's parting. Up to his thighs, nothing's parting. Up to his midsection, water isn't parting. But what does Nahshon do? Does he say this is ridiculous and go running back? He takes another step forward. And only when the water is up to his nostrils do the waters of the Red Sea part. In a way, it's too bad that story didn't make it into Exodus. But I think that what is needed in our own lives, in this moment, as a church, is this quiet courage. That in a world that seems to value status and money, the church stands for deeper spiritual values of worth and personal sacrifice. In a world that worships power, the church tells a very different story of what it means to serve others without regard for how that impacts your own status. In a world that encourages us to use others in whatever way we can, the church tells a different story of embracing each person as a beloved child of God that they are. These are moments that call for quiet courage. Gil Rendell is a church consultant who's been writing for many, many years. And when I was first ordained almost 25 years ago, I remember using one of his books to plan a church leadership retreat. And he had lots of suggestions for helping a church formulate a vision and mission statement and a purpose statement. And you needed to go through all of these steps. Well, in the most recent book he wrote, he kind of puts that all aside. Says that's not what's needed anymore. It's kind of like trying to, you know, improve the deck chairs on a Titanic. It's not what we really need. And instead, he believes that what is needed for the church is a kind of quiet courage, where we ask ourselves and keep asking ourselves, what does it mean to love God? What does it mean to love our neighbors? What does it mean to welcome everyone? And what does it mean to live as a people of God? These are the kinds of questions we have to ask. Biblical scholar Matthew Skinner, who has written about Acts a lot, comes up with this different definition of a hero. He writes that a hero, then, isn't a person who can do things no one else can do. It's someone whose endurance, faith, and love shake the rest of us out of our lethargy just enough to imagine we're capable of doing similar things and thus always capable of experiencing God's presence in life-altering ways. That's what a hero is. And I'd like to close with the words from the very ending to the novel Middlemarch. George Eliot writes, and she's writing this about her main protagonist, Dorothea Brooks. And throughout the novel, she hasn't been very kind to Dorothea. I mean, if I wrote a novel, I'd be a lot kinder to my protagonist. But Dorothea endures what no one should have to endure. It's really hard. But this is what she says about Dorothea at the very end. She writes, "Her finely touched spirit had still its fine issues, though they were not widely visible. Her full nature, like that river of which Cyrus broke the strength, spent itself in channels which had no great name on the earth. But the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive. For the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts. And that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who lived faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.